He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Okay, good morning to our listeners for this week's show of Car Keys with Mike Flint, Jada Markin, and Robin Leach. The day this show was being done was a Memorial Day for 2025, just to give a date thing in case we hear it again later on. Jay is at the racetrack and will give us a report. And I'm over in my periodic summer hideaway from the northwest corner. And people have arrived to sort of open up their houses, as have I, this weekend. And there are a few new electric vehicles around. And I think this goes well towards realizing that people are coming around to electric being a more satisfactory propulsion method of driving around than they were here last year, although the summer has just begun. Lime Rock? So, Jay?
So, Lime Rock, yes, I am here at Lime Rock for the Memorial Weekend Trans Am Classic. Trans Am is one of the oldest road racing series in the country, and was hugely popular back in the 70s. Hopefully it is regaining some popularity, and it is probably some of the best racing, road racing you can find, and probably some of the best racing you will see at Lime Rock Park during the course of any year. It's been a pretty dreary weekend so far. The weather has not cooperated much, and so the attendance has been kind of on the lower side. Hopefully things pick up today. The sun is out, cars are out, people are flocking in, and I think we should have some good racing. There was a car show yesterday. I don't know how many cars there were. There was nothing, fantastic or very exclusive, but there were some interesting cars. There always are. And I know that the entry tickets on Sundays for the car shows is definitely lesser than for race weekends, for race days. So, again, Lime Rock has a bunch of public events this year.
Jay, for our listeners and my interest, what are the different sizes of cars for the different levels of races? We have a truck series coming up this summer, do we, with the trucks possibly?
Yes.
And we know they're full-size pickup trucks of the GM 1500 series, the Ford F-150s. I don't know whether they go into the 250 range and 2500
range. Hold on. Let me stop you right away. These trucks are, I'll call them fake trucks. They are tubular chassis, just like the Trans Am cars, just like the rest of NASCAR cars. So they're purposely built race vehicles with big V8 engines, lots of horsepower. We actually, over the weekend, tested one of those NASCAR trucks in the simulator here at Lime Rock. And based on what our experience was, and our simulation is pretty good, it should be pretty interesting. Those things are very hard to drive on a road course. Keep in mind, NASCAR is a mostly oval racing series with a few road races spread out throughout the year, and Lime Rock being one of them this year for the first time in a long time. So those trucks coming here sometime, I forget what weekend in June, I believe, and will be here, should be interesting to watch. There'll be a huge crowd for sure. But again, there's a lot of events going on at Lime Rock that are less well known, less publicized, that can be a lot of fun. People can test their, the limits of their car without taking them on the track per se. There are a lot of autocross courses, events, here at Lime Rock every year. They're fairly easy to sign up, and you can find them on the Lime Rock website, and you can come and drive on the autocross your car. You don't need a helmet, and you can come and drive it and get a feel for what the car can and cannot do in a very safe and
way
environment.
Jay, how do the trucks fit on the track? Do you did a simulator of trucks, so did you have multiple trucks going around the Lime Rock simulated track? I'm curious as to what happens when they get into the corners, given their size, the width of their wheelbase, or the length and width of their wheelbases.
Those trucks are
maybe going down the straightaway. They could possibly pass, but do they fit on as well as the Trans Am cars and or the other series, which I do not know the names of? So maybe you can give our listeners that as we go through the sizes of the car question I posed to you earlier in the show.
Yeah, no, those race trucks are basically race cars, and they're the size of standard NASCAR stock cars, and pretty much the same as these Trans Am cars today, which are pretty big vehicles. But, I mean, racing Trans Am cars at Lime Rock is a lot more doable and a lot more fun to watch and a lot racier than watching Formula One at Monaco, which we just did yesterday. Which has become a procession of race cars and nothing more. But that's a whole other story.
What's the smallest? What series has the smallest cars racing at Lime Rock on any given season?
Well, there are a bunch of the vintage cars are always smaller just because cars have, you know, grown over the decades. And when you see 1950s, 1960s cars or 1970s cars, they are way, way smaller than current cars. And that,
well, let's,
you know,
look
for
at
a
the
bunch
Porsches and the Miatas and that size, the Nissans and that. What is their series called?
Well, there are all sorts of series, but the older Mazda Miatas race cars are, you know, smaller cars. They're the cars that came out in the 90s and early 2000s. Is basically what you see racing in the Miata series, and a lot of those lesser known races are run by SCCA, Sports Car Club of America, which also has a public event here in June, and those are, you know, well known within the racing community, but outside of the racing community a lot less well known. And you know, I'll be frank, and maybe somebody at Lime Rock Park is listening to me right now. I do think Lime Rock has a very good, very nice, graphically very pleasing website, a lot of information. But I do believe they need to better promote the actual race series that are coming to the track.
But that's just a personal on their website that you have found.
Oh, the schedule is on all the public events. If you go to the homepage of Lime Rock Park, you'll find, you know, you'll find that the major weekends are right, you know, on the homepage. And
right there on the homepage.
Yeah.
Is it limerockracepark.com? What is the website?
Limerockpark.com.
Limerockpark.com, okay.
And by the way, even though I am a fan, I am and do a lot of, you know, I do a lot of events here with my simulator here at Lime Rock, I am not affiliated and have no vested interest in Lime Rock Park. FYI.
Okay. What do you walk through on weekends? Do you go up into the parking lot areas? Because being doing a car show, I would think this would be maybe at some point during the season you might do that. Just to give us a take on what the spectators come in. Do they come in their sports cars, or they just come in their street cars, or it's a combination of all throughout a parking lot area?
That's a good point. Perusing the parking lots at a racetrack is always always interesting and a lot more fun than doing so at a box store parking lot, you know, for sure. Yes, there are some interesting cars. They have what they call car corrals, where cars of a certain type or brand are grouped together. So there will be an area reserved for Corvettes, for example, another one reserved for BMWs or Porsches. I personally have not gone through the parking lot just because I've been busy doing what I do. But yeah, there are a lot of nice cars just in the parking lot of the racetrack. Talk to us about traffic and driving experience in your neck of the woods.
Well, I must say, one place that I don't think anybody wants to be on a Friday afternoon and or a Sunday afternoon is a corridor road like I-95, which goes up along the coast of coast of the state of Connecticut and Rhode Island, because it can add quite a bit of time to your trip coming from the south in Connecticut, going north up to the Cape area, and vice versa on return trip. And plus you get the feeder into 95 from those coming down from Maine and Vermont and trying to get back to either New York area or New Jersey going forward. You have the Mass Pike, too, which those of us in our listing area probably ply anytime you go to Boston or in that area. So coming here last on the Friday before the Memorial Day weekend, it was a zoo. There's a lot of construction going on, not necessarily on the Friday and during the weekend, but they have lane closures periodically in these areas in congestive points. You have a place in Massachusetts where I-95 South and I-95 North merge at Providence, Rhode Island, and there's a great exodus onto 195 going to the Cape from both directions, and it clogs right up. And no matter, we left our area in Connecticut at 12:15 noonish, hoping to beat most of that kind of traffic situation, and we did very well until we got to the merger of 95 and 195 in Providence, and we were stuck there in 20-plus minutes fussing around trying to move forward to get on I-195 East to get to where we are now, where I am now as we do this show.
So
that kind of thing happens in the holiday periods and almost every weekend on I-95 corridor, and I do not know what the Mass Pike is like, so I can't inform our listeners about that. But driving conditions, vary from being very, efficient to very inefficient.
So my take on this quickly is, we are going into the summer season. There are going to be a lot more vehicles on the road. There are going to be a lot more, quote-unquote, tourists on the road, people who are not necessarily nor truckers nor commuters or people who drive these particular roads every day of the year. So it can be a little frustrating. You have to keep your eyes peeled a little bit. And I think there's a lot to be said about, planning a trip. And I know going to, towards the Cape, towards Boston, whether it's the Mass Pike or going to south towards Providence, is always very difficult. And unfortunately, there are not a lot of options. There are not a lot of alternative routes. But,
right.
Many places we go to, we can plan and make alternative plans. Like, for instance, I, happen to have to go to Newark on a regular basis, and I found a great way to go down that really doesn't, in the worst case scenario, adds 10 minutes to the drive, in the good case scenario, when there is a lot of traffic, can save me a lot of time. I'm not going to divulge my trip secrets on the air because I want to keep it that way. But it's
a
scenic route.
I'm sure all our listeners would try to go duplicate it about the same time you would, and you would have given that away. But the other thing to do is to make sure your car is in good roadworthy condition, and that is from at every level, from having a if not full, well supplied windshield washer container, which is under the hood of most cars, and if not all, because the bugs were flying in some areas, and so was dirt. And if it gets thrown up by truck tires, this is another thing. One should not drive these roads, any roads that are giving you high speeds, too closely behind industrial or commercial trucks, from the dump truck sizes and that, because we got a couple of, fortunately not window stone chips, but window hits from obviously small stones that came up and hit the windshield when we were, and it's surprising how far behind a vehicle, you could still be struck. Jay, you've probably noticed this too, but you really don't want to be behind a commercial truck that may be a dump truck full of debris or coming from a construction site where the treads of these tires might have picked up stones. And it's surprising how these stones can get wedged in between the treads, and they don't come out until the vehicles reach certain speeds, which the inertia, whatever, tends to let go of these stones when they can fly up and hit the car behind it or the vehicle behind it.
Well, my Ford Transit Connect van has a cracked windshield courtesy of a Connecticut DOT a dump truck.
Well, there you go, listener.
There we go.
And traveling this summer on these roads, be prepared for these kinds of things going on. Make sure you've got a windshield washer fluid, and along with the windshield washer fluid container being well supplied, you should have wiper blades that aren't dried out and or have gone through their useful wiping life of giving you a generally clear wipe across the windshield instead of a streaky wipe across the windshield when you use the washer and or even in rainstorms, because bad wiper blades don't do a very good job of giving you a clear view ahead. Would you agree, Jay?
Yeah, I mean, just to quickly and summarize this, I mean, when you bring your car in for servicing, and auto shops may tend to forget that, it's a very cheap fix to just put a new set of wiper blades.
I think wiper blades can last up to upwards of a year, depending on the number of storms you get.
After a year,
it's probably a good idea to do what Jay has just said for our listeners if they haven't done it. If you haven't replaced wiper blades in 3 years, you probably need to replace them no matter what level of driving you're doing.
Another thing that's worth replacing when you bring your car into service, if you're not going to do it yourself, is the battery in your fob key. You know, we all know that most cars these days are started with a push of a button, but then the battery in your fob goes dead, and all of a sudden you push on the button and nothing happens, and it says the key cannot be detected.
And you have to use the manual key that's usually inside these button keys. And
if
you're lucky enough to have the newer cars, they will a sign will pop up on your dashboard that key fob battery low. And you should replace it at that point if you haven't done it sooner, because Jay is right. If you don't have a key fob with a battery that's working, there are alternative ways around it, because they developed the keys to have a backup situation in case you did lose your battery. Seldom will you lose your battery all at once. You will have some notice that the battery is not working. One of the ways to test it is
how human
far away
nature,
does it work when you have a new battery in it from the car and you're walking towards it from a parking lot in a shopping center or not. This is not something that anybody really needs to learn, but it's just an idea. If it doesn't work where it is farthest distance away, 6 months later, the battery has gone down because it won't have the power to go the distance you may be from the car. It's surprising how far these go. A lot of people push the red button on their key fobs to find the vehicles in parking lots when there's great huge places.
About these key fobs, there is a little secret. There is usually
there's a key inside it, most of them.
Well, yes, not always, but there is a place usually on the steering column where you can place the key, the fob, close to the steering column or some other place that is. You know, each car has a spot where you can put it, and the car will start. And I know that from experience.
And sometimes they're not as easily found as Jay has just said. I didn't find the
called Google
place to put the key fob in my Hyundai Sonata for several years, and it turned out to be in the middle of the middle console between the seats, down near the bottom of the interior of the box. On top of which there were a lot of things in the box, so you had to dig around to find it. I thought that was sort of a funny place to have put the emergency locator later. But you plug the key fob in, and it will do just exactly what Jay said. If you do put your key fob near a button or near a column area in many other cars.
Well, and if you're a do-it-yourselfer like me, just go on to YouTube and punch in the type of car and what you're looking for. Because also, I learned you want to be careful about opening the key fobs if you're going to change, because there's always a method. Some of them, the key itself actually goes into the top and twists. And you don't want to break that key fob because they are very expensive to replace.
Yeah, and that's why I say you bring your car into service and just ask them to do it.
Or go to...
It'll take somebody who does it every day, you know, 10 seconds to do it, and they have the batteries, and it's game over. It's done. Anyway, I'd like to talk a little bit about safety and, you know, what summer brings us in the way of kids on bicycles, scooters. I mean, we talk about this every year, but, you know, now's the time to talk about it. And, by the way, I would like to... I missed, I was going to invite him in to spend some time with us. I ran into Bob Green here at the track, who for many years ran Survive the Drive, which was a program aimed at educating drivers about safety and teaching them how to drive. But more importantly, or the bigger picture, was to really make young drivers aware of the risks they were about to take when getting on the road. So, you know, young drivers on the road, this is a time when people get their learner's permits, when they get their driver's licenses. And I'm going from one thing to another, but I remember a few years ago, until a few years ago, there was this high school along, where was it, in Dover, on along Route 22, where... Right at the end of the school year, they would have put a couple of crashed cars at the entrance or the exit of the school, and it was just a very blunt reminder of what can happen behind the wheel. And I thought it was
absolutely
great. Somebody...
Good point made. I will say, let's get back to the safety, because of the number of bicyclists and people on electric bikes, as well as bicycle tour groups out there. They are out in force, and in the side roads where they are not as wide as the major state highways, these bicyclists do not seem to have a whole lot of. Remember, you come up behind a bicycle, even though they may have rear view spectacles on or something to see. The professionals will have those, but the recreational bicyclists probably won't. They cannot see how you are approaching them from the rear. And they wobble. The slower you go on a bicycle, the more you wobble. This is for recreational bicyclists that I've experienced this suggestion about. They will wobble ever so slightly, but you do not have wide bicycle lanes on our side roads. Many of the side roads don't even have, where I am right now, don't even have a set of lines to keep their lanes clearly marked for the cars going both directions at the same time. And drivers wobble, too. So really, this goes back to focusing on driving, which we have talked on this show many episodes.
Well, and on the bicycles, too, I bring this one up because I've seen this a number of times. If you're cycling, put away the earbuds and listening to the music on your phone. You need to be hearing what's going on around you. Especially when you say these, we have virtually no shoulders in certain areas. And some of these bicyclists are just like they're oblivious to life or think they just have the world all their own. And suddenly, you're trying to get around, but they're not aware. And all of a sudden, they make a move. And even if you're going 10, 15 miles an hour, it's still going to hurt them pretty bad. So
anyway, have all your senses.
You need all your senses going if you're going to ride a bike on a road like that.
Well, I think you need all your senses if you're going to be on the road, period. I mean, as a pedestrian, as a cyclist, I mean, as drivers, we should share the road. But, you know, it's a no pun intended, it's a two-way street. I know, you know, the rules of the road allow us to go over a yellow line when passing a bicycle. Go over the yellow line. Give them 3 to 4 feet. If I see a bicycle coming the other way, coming facing me, and cars behind it, I will go really to the right side of the road, making it clear to the driver coming from the other side, you know, facing me,
that they can go over the line. I'm not going to run into them. And I think we need, again, to be less oblivious to other people on the road and just do the right thing and be considerate of other drivers. And if everybody does this, including the cyclists, including the pedestrians, the road will be a better place. I can't believe I'm such a... I have such positive outlook on life right now.
Well, that way, keep it positive. It's good.
I'm so happy.
It's the first sunny day in a long time.
That's true. It's been dreary, dreary for too long.
Closing time. There's some intriguing, and I don't know whether you've read about it, Jay, and I can't give a definition in this particular show to our listeners, about electric battery improving, being improved by different components that are getting into battery electric battery cars production. I think some of the benefits that I'm reading about with these new battery types are improved speed in accepting a charge, therefore lessening one of the major gripes I've had on this show so many times I can't count it, about having to wait a long time to get your battery up to a point where you can go a significant distance beyond 50 or 100 miles in slower battery charging times. They're also trying to get rid of some of the expensive materials that are in batteries, and they've found some less expensive materials that are allowing them to not only take the charge faster, but increase the range of batteries. So I think in the next 2 to 4 years, we're going to see a significant improvement in the battery structure, therefore improving and taking away my gripe about range anxiety, which, again, we've heard too often on this show.
Way too often. I agree. Way too often.
Thank you.
Well, I think some of these new materials will take away that back end when the battery is over of trying to recycle or be environmentally friendly, because these lithium-ion batteries, what are you going to do with them?
Okay, so we can all do
point,
like...
Mike, I got to tell you, there have been very few articles on failures of the batteries so far in many of the electric cars. Yes, there's always a chance you're going to get a bad battery, badly produced battery, component-wise or functional-wise, but it's amazing how long batteries... For example, I don't have an electric car, but I have a hybrid car, and... I have a lifetime, Hyundai put a lifetime battery warranty on those particular parts. This is not the 12-volt battery. This is the, 24-volt or higher. But many people have got electric cars with 200,000 miles on them, and they never change a battery. And this has to do with Priuses. I'm not sure. Jay, you know something about the Tesla battery lives, I think. Batteries are lasting a long time, but yes, Mike, it is always a wonder of where these products are going to be recycled instead of just disposed of.
Oh, yeah, if they can be recycled. Some of them are hazardous to the point where you just have to try and bury them somewhere, and that's not good, never good. On all of that, guys, you know what?
Thanks to our listeners for listening to this one. We hope you have a great week and a great drive.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, Robinhood Radio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.